Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us for a personal tour of How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Bruck, and international expert agro-homeopath, Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and we are getting ready for our second show on how homeopathy helps to grow great gardens. I think that our co-host, Kavi, has arrived. And Kavi, can you hear me today?
Yes, I hear.
Okay, we're getting a little, our sound is very light, to see if you can make an adjustment to your, at least on my end. Let me try it again.
How about this?
Okay.
How about this? Any
okay. A little bit better. Are you wearing a headphone today?
Yeah, I'm wearing the headphones today.
Okay, great. It just sounds a little bit like you're in a tunnel to me. We're going to be talking. I was just looking up for my notes for today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about insects and a little bit about the Southern Hemisphere, because we didn't get to do that before. So I want to appreciate everyone who has been listening to the show, and also that there is an opportunity to get onto the blog that is on the Homeopathy World Community website and post your comments there, as each show will be posted. And also on the Blog Talk Radio website, there have been people who have been posting comments. So the last show, we talked about preparing the soil through composting, keep clicking away from my notes, through composting, using worms to turn and enrich the soil. The worms also increase the organic matter and aerate the soil. So it's a good thing to go out and purchase some worms and start your worm garden. And also they help keep the moisture content high. Composting helps also to adjust the acid soil, if it's too acid or too alkaline at the pH level. And there's ways to test that. Maybe at some time, Kavi will help us to teach us how to do that. Also, it helps to keep a more neutral range of pH. When checking your plants, you also are looking for the symbiotic relationship of the bacteria and fungal growth on the root system, which Kaviraj has described in the last show, and this assists the nutrient availability for uptake by the plants. So we're going to be providing nourishment for our plants just like we want to nourish ourselves. We also wanted to cover how to apply homeopathic remedies to our garden. That's really the purpose of the show. And we touched upon putting the remedies in our watering can and pouring them directly on the soil as one method. The other method would be to spray, which we have not learned exactly how to do that yet. And more specifically, we're concerned with reducing an overgrowth of unwanted fungus by using the homeopathic remedies. I was looking at our Blog Talk Radio show and checking in, and Samuel Flagler had left a number of questions in the comments section of Blog Talk Radio. He wants to know what potency of the Juglans nigra and what potency of the silica to use. And so I'm going to ask Kavi to tell us, please, how to prepare the antifungal remedies, silica and Juglans nigra or Juglans regalia, and in what potency how much, how often, and for what conditions. Mm. That's a mouthful.
Yes, quite a bit, but there is enough to tell. When I refer to treating plants with homeopathy, then there is a standard dosing procedure. You get a potency from the homeopathic store, preferably in liquid, because that makes dispensing a lot easier, as when you have pills, because not all pills have the same strength, because some people put more liquid on the pills than others. And so there are some differences there, whereas the liquid is the liquid. Yeah, that is all made according to the same standard, according to Homeopathy International, where most homeopathic pharmacies are members of. So if you can get a 6x potency, then you put 20 drops of that in a liter of water. And then you succuss the bottle 50 times. Succussion means that you bang the bottom of the bottle on a book quite forcefully, yeah, so that you get a good mix of the remedy with the water. And then this liter you put in a watering can of 20 liters and then fill it up with 19 more liters of tap water. Yeah. If you open the tap very all the way, then the force of the water coming out of the tap is more than sufficient to mix it. If that is not possible, then you just fill it up and stir it with the stick. And if the watering can is smaller, the amount of remedy put in must be also proportionally smaller, of course. So a 10-liter can, it's only half a liter, and just 10 drops of the remedy. Yeah. And you apply the contents of the watering to the roots of the plants that you want to treat. And if the 6X is not available, you can also use a 6C. And they are usually available in liquid from most homeopathic stores.
Okay, so you're asking us to get a liquid potency of either 6X or 6C, which we consider considerably a low potency of a homeopathic remedy.
Yeah.
And yes. if we're not using a liter measurer, because how would we in America, we would use a gallon, for instance, we would have to
yes.
transfer.
Okay. Yeah.
So
about a quarter gallon.
In terms of dilution.
In liter,
yes.
A liter is a quarter gallon. Yeah,
is a what?
Because, it's a quarter gallon. 1 gallon is approximately
a quarter liters. A quarter of a gallon.
Yes.
Okay.
Because a gallon
okay.
is approximately 4 liters. Yeah.
Okay.
So you use a quarter gallon and you still use your 20 drops. Yeah. You have
20
those.
Drops.
You have those big. Yes, you have those big Coca-Cola bottles. Yeah. We call them 1.5 liters. You would say it is, how much would that be in the United States? So many fluid ounces.
Uh-huh.
You say 1.5 liters, so that is a quarter of a gallon plus an eighth of a gallon. That is, that is 3/8 of a gallon. Yeah.
Okay,
those are the bottles that you can use because they are nice and strong. They can stand some banging. And they have sufficient empty space in them, yeah, because you only fill them for 3/4 then, or 2/3 actually. So they have sufficient empty space that the water can nicely dance up and down and get well mixed.
Okay. So we need to have some air space in order for the shaking or the succussion of the bottle, and we're going to do that 50 times. And I'm also
yes.
wondering, because I have not seen in our pharmacies, I do not see typically liquid remedies. I typically see just the pellets.
If you want to order liquids, then the best thing is to order directly from the homeopathic manufacturer, like, for instance, Burdick
okay.
and Taflin San Diego. Yeah.
Okay.
That is one American company that I know of, and I am sure there are several more, but I don't know their names.
Okay, so we definitely need to begin with the liquid. And okay, and the liquids are in alcohol. Is that their percentage of alcohol? Okay.
Yes.
And so that's okay too.
They're usually 70% to 90% alcohol.
Okay. All right. So we're understanding. We're going to take the 20 drops, put it into the measurer of the liter watering can. I suppose we do have liter soda bottles and stuff that we could use in America.
Yeah.
Or put it in a quarter of a gallon of water in a closed container. So we're not really putting it yet into the watering can. And then we're going to tap with a lot of force 50 times. And now we're going to put this liter in the water. So then
yes,
are we going to dilute it again?
A 20-liter watering can is there 4 or 5 gallons.
Okay. So then we're going to put it into the larger container of 5 gallons
yes.
and dilute. Okay. And from here, we're going to apply it directly to the roots of the plant via the soil, right
yes.
around the
yes.
plant?
Yes,
okay.
right around the plant.
How much do we pour?
The roots of the plant are very much like the mouth of the human, you see. The plants drink and eat through their roots. Yeah? So they are basically with their mouth in the soil. And depending on the size of the plant, if you water about, from 200 milliliters, which is a fifth of a quarter gallon, yeah, to about a quarter gallon, depending on the size of the plant. If it is a tree, then you give it a quarter a gallon or half a gallon even. And if it's not, then, the amount should be adjusted to the size of the plant, yeah?
Okay.
Just like,
so the amount that we give of the liquid diluted homeopathic remedy is proportioned to the size of the plant?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And so we just basically pour some on and we kind of judge it from as we're pouring it whether there's moisture around, we're moisturizing the soil?
Yeah.
I'm very new at this.
And then it sinks into the soil and then it's taken up by the plant and it's taken up by all the entities around the plant that assist the plant or that even those that go against it. Yeah. So, let me see. I didn't bring the microphone closer to my mouth. I am still talking in the same way. Yeah. I have turned up the volume, and I can't turn it up any higher.
Okay, it's getting a little bit clearer.
This is about the highest volume I have. That is because in this laptop there is only a plug for the headphones. There is no plug for the microphone, which
okay.
is very strange. The amount of remedy has to be adjusted to the size of the plant and. The smaller the plant, the less you give it, of course. And
okay.
If you give that around the stem directly, that is mostly sufficient for the plant to take it up and to have good results with it. If you tend to give too much, then it is just like Hanuman says for humans. If you give too large a dose of the remedy, it will bring about much trouble as a rule. Yeah. He says, why should you use large means when small means are sufficient? Yeah. So we have to.
Okay.
We have to. is the smallest possible, actually.
Right. So if we're going by the organon, we want to use a minimum dose. That's the smallest
yes.
amount that's sufficient to elicit some response by the plant that it can
yes.
strengthen its vital force.
Ah. And because the plant is basically very capable of reacting to a very small amount, yeah, you can see that there is little problem in giving it small doses, because the plant is much smaller than we are in general, the plants that we grow in the garden, except for the peas, yeah. And if it is sufficient for us to have a single pill, then we should understand that it is sufficient for the plant to get but a little bit of this dilution.
Okay, so that explains why we dilute it so much, and people might think that that's not enough to do anything, but we don't really need that much. I wanted to answer Samuel Flagler's question in regard to the silica and the Juglans nigra. The Juglans regia, I said it incorrectly before,
R-E-G-I-A,
it's a common walnut, Persian walnut or the English walnut, and it was an original
yes.
walnut tree in the Old World, right? It's actually native
mm-hmm.
from the Balkans eastward to the Himalayas and southwest China. I do remember collecting walnuts from a walnut grove as a young child also. So this
yeah.
particular plant is used, as you said earlier, for assisting with removal of fungus or what other types
no,
of problems?
That is the new plants is to inhibit the lead seeds so that they will not germinate.
Okay.
Yeah, and the silica is for the fungi.
Okay.
Yeah.
As you may have seen,
if you go to any walnut tree, nothing grows underneath because it has an allele chemical that inhibits all the seeds of anything that wants to grow underneath or could grow underneath. It is simply not possible for it to grow because the seeds are inhibited. Yeah, and that's why under a walnut tree, you never see anything growing. The only thing
right.
that likes walnut and that walnut allows is corn.
Corn?
So if you... Yes, corn. If you use the Juglans before you plant the corn, your corn will grow better and bigger.
Wow. That is something that I did not know. I do know that a lot of people take the walnut beverage to clean their, in our human body, to clean their system also. It's part
yes.
of a formula that's used.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but that is because on humans these things work a little different than on plants. There are, you know, we can anthropomorphize a little bit with plants, but we can't do it too much. For instance, if you look at the nutrients, yeah, the relationships between the nutrients in plants is completely different as the relationships between nutrients in people. Yeah.
Okay.
If we look in Materia Medica and we see, for instance, that phosphor and Kali, they follow each other well. But in the plant, if you give Kali, it stops phosphor. And if you give phosphor, it stops Kali. So they are
Kali and phosphorus?
Yes, they are each other's inimicals in plants. They are each other's enemies in plants. If you give a
okay.
big dose of Kali, if you give a big dose of calcium or potassium, as we call it, yeah, then the plant will not be able to take up any phosphor, and then it will get a phosphor deficiency. Vice versa, if you give it a big dose of phosphorus, then it will not be able to take up any calcium, any potassium, and then you get a potassium deficiency. Yeah. Whereas in people, if you first give a dose of calcium and later a dose of phosphor, or vice versa, they will follow each other well, and they will have no inimical relationships.
That's fascinating. So the mineral relationships work differently in plants than they do in humans, and we really do need to learn the relationships and the in the minerals for applying to the soil to help the plants uptake their nutrients. And so that they don't turn yellow or other.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That's what I've also explained in my book. So explained that these relationships are different. And if you look in the list of relationships between the remedies, then you will find that they are different from the relationships that you find in regular Materia Medica.
Okay, so we can't just go to the Materia Medica and find the answers to these types of problems. What's the name of your book again?
Homeopathy for Farm and Garden.
Okay, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden. Okay, maybe a lot of people would be interested in that book to learn about the mineral and other types of relationships. And you probably tell us what are inimicals that don't work together and which ones work in symbiotic relationships or combinations together, and how to apply them in the different problem areas, whether it's pests or drought or shock or other kinds of symptoms that a plant could exhibit. That would be great. Okay, I'll see if we can put a link on the website to that book. I think we might have it, but I'll check. Also, he wanted to know about the use of silica.
The silica is used in a similar way as the implants. Over the area where you want to control the fungi, there you spray it out. But if you put compost, then you don't need to do that, because then the silica is then not needed, because the fungus is needed to process the compost. But if you don't have any compost and you just leave your soil bare, or if you have just started doing things organically and you put compost, then you get an excess of fungi in the beginning. Yeah, because the fungi have been starved for so long, all of a sudden they get this compost and then they grow in profusion. Yeah,
I see.
And to control that, you spray it with silica. And then you spray the whole surface in an even manner, not excessively wet, just enough that it is nice and moist.
Mm-hmm. So we could use like the sprinkle on the watering can all around it just to give it a little bit. And so it's really, I think of it as a balancer. If there's too little or too much and overabundance, then it's going to balance it out. It's going to help in some way to do that. I love silica. It's one of my favorites.
Silica in agriculture is actually the key to agriculture, because it has much more functions than just for fungal control. It helps in seed germination. It helps the seedlings after transplant to become very strong. It helps in so many different ways. It helps when the plants begin to flower. And you want only flowers, then you give it twice in a row in 48 hours, and you get a greater abundance of flowers, and the flowers will be bigger and have a stronger smell. Yeah, silica is actually, as I said, the key to agriculture, because without silica, no plant can live. No plant can even stand upright without silica. Yeah, so silica is the most important remedy in the homeopathic Materia Medica for plants.
I'm going to keep that in mind. Yes, we need strength. And also, let's see, even though we've had some, I think we're going to move on to the next area. Even though we've had some cooler weather, which brought us all outside to clean up the yard, we've had, here where I'm living, we've had another heat wave, or we've been seeing some very hot days with cooler nights. And some folks might prefer to work in the garden in the early morning or around sunset hours to clean up their yard. Maybe in the northern states, gardeners are already bringing their potted plants indoors. And along with those plants, the bugs will hitch a ride indoors to our heated homes. Other insects will also remain alive throughout the cold season as they burrow underground, in the trees, and in our house siding, basements, or attics. It makes sense to examine the plants and the soil for disease and for the insect infestation before moving them indoors. And we don't want to bring an infected plant near any other of the house plants, at least for a few weeks until we solve that problem. Kavi, we would really like to know your advice about cleaning up the yard and trimming branches and other things that you might do in the garden.
All right. Insects, arthropods, and snails, they may be carried into your house with the plants, as you said. So you should inspect the pots, inclusive of the underside, and check for mites in the space where the leaves meet the branches or the branches meet the stem. And where they meet, the spider mites may hide, and they're often so small, you need a magnifying glass to even see them. Yeah? And then you check the rim and the underside of the pot for gelatinous masses, because these are snails' eggs, and they will hatch when the plant enters the warmer house. And many insects burrow into the soil, and they will come out once the plants are inside, like pill bugs or slaters. They are among the more notorious, and they are often active only at night. So it pays to check your plants in the evenings after the lights have been turned off. And the same with snails, which need the cooler night air and the moisture to become active. And many insects remain dormant during the winter and have made their shelter in niches of the garden where you normally don't come. And the garden cleanup will always involve a thorough inspection of debris, stones, and other items that don't get moved, yeah, because insects have the canny ability to just seek out those places where you never come. Yeah, so
under stones, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have to turn over the stones.
You know the difference. Uh-huh. You should make sure you know the difference between beneficial species and pests. And remember that moving debris will also disturb the beneficial insects and the predators. And don't try to turn your garden into a sterile space. You will fail anyway. And many of the pests have a useful function in the winter when they process debris. Yeah.
Your accent is a little bit debris. I usually say debris.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. Pruning must be done in such a way that you get the branches down to two eyes, as they call it, above the point of attachment. The eyes are where they are little growing buds. Where new branches or leaves come out, yeah? And you do that especially with fruit-bearing shrubs and trees. And the next spring, yeah, they'll give them more branches and then it's a harvest. And also, it is good to apply calendula to the roots after pruning so that the plants recover faster and have no negative effects from pruning. Because if there is a certain frost after pruning, then you may damage the branches and you may get rots. And arnica or calendula will protect against such events. All the debris can be composted, and to speed up the composting, it is very, very wise to make a strong batch of chamomile tea and water that the entire heap with it. And it is a compost starter of the first order. Food scraps, cuttings, dead plants, and annuals that are dying can be pulled up and added to the compost. And dead leaves are another good material for compost, and so are grass clippings, straw, pea straw, and kelp. And fish head collected from the market and blood and bone are other ingredients that make the compost of high quality.
Wow, we have learned so much today, and our time has just flown right by. There's not no more time left. I did want to spell out the word calendula, C-A-L-E-N-D-U-L-A. That is for after you've done your trimming to your trees. And so we will see you next Wednesday. Thank you so much, Kavi. We've learned a lot today. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kavi Raj, Vaikuthanath, and Debbie Bruck on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.